Hello, friends, benders and non-benders alike. Welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's brand new podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco.
Now, friends, if you've been with us for our recaps and discussions of episodes 1 through 3 of Avatar The Last Airbender, or even if you just know the show and love the show, you know that we all love fan favorite character Sokka. So we're very, very excited to be joined this episode. It's fabulous, fabulous Jack DeSena!
Hello! Just got here. So excited to have just walked in. Very curious how intros go on this show. I'm going to have to listen
Jack,
back.
Surprise!
The illustrious Water Tribe member himself, not a bender, but up there in the higher echelon of Water Tribe legends
gotta
and icons.
Gotta be.
He's got to have statues all over Water Tribe land. That important.
He's well-traveled.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's well-traveled. He was very important part of the Great War. And he did things no other person, bender or not, was able to do during this whole thing.
Learns all the local fighting styles as he travels.
No, wait. Before you say too much more, we're trying really hard not to do too many spoilers, even though we feel like everyone who's listening probably has watched the entire series multiple times. So instead of doing spoiler alerts, we do something called the foreshadow report.
Great.
So foreshadow report, we have to have you back on for possibly my favorite moment, kind of sort of comedic moment in the entire series, which involves Sokka telling Zuko what happened to his girlfriend. And we're not going to say any more than that.
Oh.
But that exchange is so good.
I mean, there's a lot of foreshadowing there. We could not do that exchange without foreshadowing so much. But yeah, thank you. I agree. Dante. Yeah.
So we can't do it, but we got to bring you back because I could listen to that on a loop and I would never stop laughing. It's so funny and so good.
Dante could say his line pretty free and clear.
Right.
Ooh, that's what we should do. Let's just say a few things and then Dante will have to respond with that line no matter what we say. Like, it can just be
random. It doesn't have to be
about Avatar. Like, I twisted my ankle and it was rough because I didn't get to go on that hike I really wanted to go on.
That's rough, buddy.
I think I'm having sleep apnea, and then I've been waking up with headaches, and I talked to my doctor. I did an at-home sleep study, and they're going to maybe looking at getting me a CPAP machine. It's really blowing my mind, making me feel really old.
That's rough, buddy.
So I'm just starting to come to terms with the fact that I can't eat cereal all day, every day, for every meal, and that is extremely upsetting to me. What advice do you have for me?
That's rough, buddy.
Dante, this is an igneous rock.
That's rough, buddy.
Oh, yes. Anything in the pun family, I am so on board for.
I love that you guys are both improv geniuses and just jump into improv there was no hand signals. There was no like winks of the eye. They just jumped into improv.
Did you feel like you were unprepared?
I was unprepared because I'm not that kind of actor.
Dude, you had your line, man. I think you were well taken care of in this exercise.
I know. I was going to say, if I may, you felt like you were unprepared. That's rough, buddy. There we go.
Thank you, Barney. Thank you. And today in our That's Rough Buddy segment, thank you so much. Scene.
Jack, this is probably something that you get asked all the time. I know it's something that we get asked with respect to The Legend of Korra, and I think it's also probably fair to say that the Bolin character is sort of the heir apparent to Sokka's brilliance, and PJ was kind of the only one who really got away with improvising on The Legend of Korra. What was your relationship, if any, to improv with Last Airbender? Because it was so new and so undeveloped as, like, did you feel like you could? Did they ask you to? What was going on there?
I think I maybe did a bit more. Like, as the seasons went on, perhaps, I feel like in, like, runs, you know, we'd isolate a line and try a couple things, and occasionally I would feel encouraged to throw some stuff around, but I don't remember, like, doing a lot of it. Dante tells me I did, and sometimes it makes me feel embarrassed. I'm like, did I just start saying stuff?
I don't know. I was doing all my lines exactly the way they are written.
Me too.
Precisely, word for word, just period for period. And Jack seemed like much more freer in what he was doing. I was like, he's having fun. I'm here in the room by myself just reading lines.
Part of it, though, it's the benefit of not being very good on the first take is then they'll just let you go for a while, and then you just start saying whatever you want by the end because no one's listening anymore, you know?
The so let him get good technique.
Yeah.
Follow-up question. Did PJ steal any of your stuff?
Wait, did he steal my personal belongings or did he
steal any of Jack's? Steal any of Jack's stuff.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense to me.
I don't think so. I think they stand alone.
Have you guys met?
Yes.
You get on like a house on fire, whatever that means.
We have not actually hung out. We met once in the lobby at Nick Animation, introduced by Mike and Brian, who, like, I think they were in a record. I was there for an audition, and we were pulled together, and Mike and Brian were very excited to have, you know, the comedic characters collide.
That's
going
to happen on this podcast. I see it happening. I could see it as if I'm looking into the future. Yeah.
That's like the spinoff. That's like a spinoff show.
Yeah. PJ and I just met that once, but we are starting a rival podcast.
Very unpleasant news to get. Very unpleasant news.
Yeah, we'll be starting a rival podcast.
You will win. You will win. You absolutely will win.
We're full of foreshadowing on that one. We don't care. We just let it fly.
So much foreshadowing. You lucky ducks. I wish people said lucky duck more often. That's just not something that gets said anymore.
Lucky duck.
Gosh, you
that's
lucky
the bee's
duck.
Knees. I mean, lucky duck. Great phrase.
We can bring it back. We can bring it back. Or what kind of ducks do we have in this show? Lucky turtle ducks.
Lucky turtle ducks. Right. Way to turn it back around. You're so right.
That's what we have in our show. Yeah, lucky turtle duck.
The turtle ducks are awfully cute.
Are there turtle? I don't remember that. I'm not good. I don't have a good recall for the hybrid animals. When do turtle ducks pop up?
They're all over the place, Jack.
Is it
rude that whenever they describe a hybrid animal, I think about if it would be delicious or not? And a turtle duck sounds delicious.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you, is it possible that the worst bad act you would have to overcome in the fandom in terms of like people being mad at Sokka, was it that you wanted to eat Momo before Momo was Momo?
Yeah, and that's this episode, right?
Yeah, we just talked about episode 3 and it's true. You kept saying that that was going to be a meal.
First of all, so it's not like great taste by Sokka. I don't think like he's a stringy little jumping thing. I don't think he looks that delicious.
Not a lot of meat.
But it's a desperate time, right? They've been out there flying around.
You've been eating rocks and stuff, wishing it was nuts and whatnot.
So I'm ready. Yeah.
And if you barbecue my little dude, his ears are probably going to be nice and crispy. Nice and crispy ears.
Legitimately. Some like
crunchy
pig ear style. That sounds
we call
nice.
It chicharron. We would call that Filipinos or Latinos would call it chicharron.
Please, no one come after me. I want everyone to know I do not think that Momo's ears would make good chicharron. I am very, very upset by this. This is rough, buddy.
Yeah.
This is rough.
That's rough, buddy. That's real rough.
I do think that probably is Sokka's biggest. Well, at the beginning, he's like just straight up a misogynist, like just very sexist. Until
I'm glad you said
episode
it. So
four, foreshadowing report. Foreshadowing report. Episode 4, some of that gets beaten out of him. I'd say that's probably his biggest flaw at the beginning, right?
Quick question, back shadow report.
Yeah.
Who's older, Sokka or Katara? By how much? How many months?
Like 2 years, maybe? Isn't he like 16 and 14, something like that?
Yeah, he's older.
I don't know. He seems very mature. I think that's a key part of the
show.
You
never call her like my little sister. You never be like my little sis.
Do I not? I feel like I...
He might, but I don't...
And this is Katara, my flying younger sister by 2 years.
Are they twins?
No. Are they twins, Dante? How dare you?
They're not twins. He's definitely older.
It's true that because even when they bicker, I don't feel like he pulls the little sister card. It's more just like, you're annoying because you're my sister. It's less about her being little sister.
I know. And you know big brothers pull that card all the damn time.
Yes, that's a good point.
But he does have the attitude of like, I'm supposed to be in charge. Like, he thinks of himself as that. And I think Katara's maturity is just so far beyond his in so many aspects that, like, yeah, the dynamic is not full big brother, little sister, but I think he feels it. Sokka believes that he's the, you know, responsible chieftain, older brother type.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, that is something that people talk about in the context of talking about Avatar, because so many of the characters that have great qualities and are so admirable, and then we kind of are tough on, and rightfully so, we're tough on the characters' lesser qualities, like wanting to eat Momo, for example, or being a misogynist.
He grows out of both of those.
He grows out of both of them, and I think that's a kind of a question, and I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on... You know, it's so important how things are reflected in media, especially in shows for young people. I think that there's a conversation that happens, especially with something that was made 16 years ago versus stuff that might be made for the first time today. You know, what role models are we showing kids, and what kind of qualities do we want these main characters, these lovable protagonists to have? And if we were doing this anew, would we make Sokka different? Would he not have those qualities? But at the same time, it's like, but isn't it kind of good to show someone get the one-upmanship of having those qualities and then getting beaten down, kind of? Like, do you know what I mean? I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, I think how quick the journey is tells me that was something that they were planning with that character from the beginning, I would have to assume. Like, in the pilot, he definitely, like, has a pretty bossy, condescending attitude towards Katara in a lot of ways. And some of it is Big Brother stuff, but some of it clearly is that he does have this, you know, from the beginning, this like cooked in sexist, like, I'm the guy, I'm the leader, I come from this, like,
you're the
chieftain.
Only guy left in your tribe.
Right.
The only
and
guy
I,
left
you know,
in your tribe.
Yeah, and so he thinks he's supposed to be this
you're probably
thing that
spoiled.
His dad was, and he's got
you're probably spoiled guy.
Probably spoiled.
Probably everyone's catering to the only man in town. He's the only man in town.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
But also feels a tremendous pressure because of that and frustration, you know, about like trying to train these tiny kids.
But I think like giving him that thing to overcome at the beginning, I think is helpful and does shape his journey. And it makes him it is a attribute that I think carries with Sokka throughout the show, that he is often good at like not underestimating people, I think is maybe a fair thing. And I think that's a lesson that he learns here. So I don't know if this show was being made today, would they have started him from that unlikable point? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think when you watch a lot of shows, movies, television shows, you have to watch it within the context of the time it's made. But this particular show, I think the timelessness of this show and why it was, again, so popular today is maybe it was before its time, or maybe it's a timelessness of how it was made that I think all these issues resonate and still are being talked about today. And I think kind of works out perfectly with Sokka, because I don't think you dismiss those attributes in any characters, because then where's the growth of any of the characters?
Right.
But to see the growth of Sokka, I think it's really... So I don't know if we were before our time, or I like to think we were timeless. Timeless? Sokka? I called you Sokka, Jeff. Sokka, are we timeless?
Here we go.
We're timeless.
That's what, it's
we're
fine. That's what everyone is thinking anyway. That's like the blend, when you're hearing two characters from the same show that is so beloved talk, I mean... Of course you're going to call.
And our voices are, very.
The great thing about the show is, you know, I mean, I talked about this with Jack. Like, I didn't go back and watch a lot of this when it was coming out and whatnot. It was it was the gig we were doing. We were super into it. And we would talk about what we were reading in the scripts between me, Jack, and May. But even today, until I'm watching it now, it's like, May and Jack are Katara and Sokka, and like in my mind, because when I first read, when I first received this story and experienced this story, it was literally Jack and May and me. Zach was in New York, so
he was
never
separate.
Saw
we
Zach.
Never recorded.
We just
Zach.
Heard his voice over the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
So he really was Aang in the sense that you had no physical representation.
He really was this mythical, like the Avatar. Like, I don't know, that's a kid that's saving the world. The rest of us are just playing our part in this whole theatrical event. But really, Jack and May were Katara and Sokka, and still are in my mind. And even when I'm watching it, I'm like, that's Jack and May right there.
It's definitely, like my relationship to, like, Dante's storyline for a lot of season one is, you know, cordoned off and whatever. And so I would just be sitting watching Dante do it as a little play, and I just could kick back and listen. And that is my same thing. That's Zuko to me, is I'm seeing Dante looking real cool. being
he's pretty
Zuko.
Cool. Unless he's doing what I did and throwing errant punches as if he needs to actually be punching something when he's doing a fight scene.
I was
he's
doing
an on-camera
also.
Actor and doesn't know how to not use your paw.
Oh, I big time.
Did you do that too?
Yeah. I would, whenever like we got to combat stuff. It's like, all right, I'm taking off my hoodie because I got too many zippers. I'm going to be very jangly as I needlessly throw punches all around.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. It's amazing, you guys out there, to understand that voiceover actors become kung fu masters in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
We know all the kicks, all the punches. We can dodge bullets. We can do anything. Just tell us what we're doing. We can fall off buildings and roll down and get hit. We do all that stuff. We're like stuntmen with our voices.
But you guys had to do sincere action. Like, most of my combat noises, and I had moments of, like, very sincere combat noises that had to feel really dropped in and whatever, but I got away with being very broad in a lot of moments where my, like, action sounds are just like, blah, yeah! But y'all, like, I find, like, the ability to actually, like, calmly channel those sounds in an authentic, you know, combat way.
I'm not good at it.
Jack, we're benders, so right. we're benders.
So it flows through you.
Like me and Varney on this side, we're benders on this side.
Oh, that's
yeah,
what it
I
is.
Get it. I get it.
I mean, you are.
No, that's cool. No, it's cool.
You're
I'll
smart.
Step out.
You have a boomerang.
Yeah.
You do things.
Yeah.
But we're benders, so leave the bending. You know, we do our thing on this side.
Yeah. Sorry, that's rough, buddy. Hey, Jack, two questions. One, how much VO had you done when you got Sokka? And two, had you done action-y kind of VO stuff before where you had already had some experience with the sort of awkwardness of making the sound of falling onto the ground when you were standing up?
No, very little. I had done one Disney movie called The Wild, which is not, no one remembers it for good reason. It came out at the same time as Madagascar and had the same plot as Madagascar.
Were you an animal?
I was an animal. I was a hippo. I was a sidekick hippo.
You were a hippo.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Psychic hippo.
Psychic hippo.
It was one of those situations where clearly, like, two people were pitching the same idea at the same time, or even, I think I heard the story, I don't know if this is true, but I heard it as a writing duo was developing a thing together and had a falling out and separately sold it. One to DreamWorks and one to Disney.
Oh, wow.
I kind of so want to see that inside baseball movie. I want to see, like...
Yeah, that I probably just made up. This rumor that I'm starting that we'll shoot a movie of right now.
I feel like I can't sell anything, and two guys are selling the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Get this. They're animals. They talk. Got it? Boom.
There's a sidekick hippo.
There's a little hippo running around.
You
said
sidekick hippo. I thought you said psychic hippo, and I was fascinated by
it. No, you would have heard of this movie if I played a psychic hippo. That would have been a memorable,
successful blockbuster. That's the new pitch. Me and Jack are going out to all the places.
Separately.
Pitching the psychic hippo separately, but we're going to get them both made from different studios.
So I had just done that.
Yeah. And so the hippo did not have any fight sequences.
No, the hippo had no psychic powers.
Or action star powers.
Varney, one thing I think we did know when we started working on the show was Jack came from, like, the Nickelodeon family.
I was on a live action Nick show.
Oh,
at
here
the time.
We go. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on All That, which is a sketch show that
improv
is back
show.
On the air now. No, not improv. They wrote it. They wrote the lines ahead of time. It's like, I grew up watching it. It was like Kenan and Kel and Amanda and Lori Beth. There was like, you know, it's a beloved show of my childhood. And then I was on it for 4 years, like all through high school. It was like my summer job. And then Avatar happened maybe 3 years into that. We did
yeah,
the pilot.
It, right? Because you were going back and forth. I
yeah.
remember that.
We did the pilot, I think, when I was like 16 or 17. So I was on All That at the time. I don't know if that was part of me being cast. It might have been.
But we all knew you were kind of part of the Nickelodeon family coming in.
Yeah. Whereas you and May were at the time on a Disney show together, right? And was May also still on an ABC Family show?
May was probably doing 18 things at once during that time.
Oh my gosh. Just hearing you guys talk about how young you were when I'm like thinking about being a six, like my summer job.
I was 17. Dante was 38.
Varney, I wasn't that young.
Oh, please, you were a child actor. Please, you were a breakdancer. You were a professional breakdancer.
I was a child actor, but not during this time. It feels like I watched Jack and May grow up.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, May and I were like 15 and 16.
I remember when May started driving by herself to the booth.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, yo, May, like, you're driving by yourself. Your dad's not with you? Are you good? Are you all right?
And you guys all seem so together and collected and, like, grounded, great people. And I think that's great. It's not always like that.
We largely made it out okay. I'm impressed by us. Yeah.
We are impressed. No, my memory of Jack was, this is that kid, because I've seen your show on Nickelodeon. I was like, oh, that's that kid from the sketch show. And he had long hair, long curly hair.
I still have long. It. I've just got it all back right now. Check it out.
And there he was is, super everyone. Funny. And he was super funny from day one.
Oh, thank you.
And he was always late because he was coming from the Inland Empire.
Yeah. Yes. So when you were saying like, oh, we had our stuff together, my immediate thought was like, no, I was pretty unprofessional. I was like, because okay. I started college during, like, I think we had recorded, so we did the pilot and then it takes a very long time. So it took like probably a year and a half before we then started recording the show. And so I think we had done like maybe one season. And then by the time we were doing the second season, I was at college. I was at UCLA. So I was like living on my own, off at school, having to commute to Burbank all by myself. And I was frequently late. And it's a deep, like, retroactive source of shame. It was a lot of shame at the time, but it's a lot of shame, right? I carry a lot of shame as like, what an unprofessional 18-year-old I was.
He was running late.
Okay. I mean, they had to make up times. They had to tell me fake times as to when the records were in hopes of
they
getting
did?
It done. Yeah.
They
I
had
think
to
so.
Give you a time that was earlier yeah. than it actually was.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
kid actors.
Rich.
Kid actors. What are
but
you going to do?
But you know what? At the
actors.
Same time, you're
But I
just,
got better. I got better.
Well, you got better, and also that's kind of the irony, right, is that people think that, you know, like it sounds so fun, and that there are aspects of all of that, but also you do have to do, you have to be responsible in a way that just a college student showing up for class, it's a different kind of, oh, I just didn't show up for class than it is, you know, because I slept in, than it is like I had to, you know, I didn't go to class and also I was late to my voiceover recording for this network that I want to be happy and stay in good, you know, I mean, that's a lot
it's
of pressure.
It's a deeply weird aspect of being a child actor is that you are a professional in a professional setting, in an adult professional setting, you're working adult business hours around adults, and you have to like learn how to be professional and responsible.
You're
and
in a kid body.
I made some,
kid body.
You know, sometimes I was good at that.
Kind of like Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh my gosh.
And the kids being forced to deal with adult world and adult responsibilities when they also still want to be kids.
That was good. Y'all should have a podcast about that. Because on PJ and I's podcast, we never bring back the themes. We just kind of get off.
Oh, I don't even. I'm so angry with you and PJ right now. I can't even. I can barely stomach it. I'm so enraged and jealous.
I mean, we never make these connections. We just do bits.
Okay, so you were, what I've gotten so far is that Dante was wildly intimidated by Jack because Jack was a big shot Nickelodeon sketch artist star.
Star.
Who made up all of my
and
lines.
Made up all of his lines.
Made up all his lines. So funny. He's having such a great time. I'm pouting in the corner.
You were in character. You were method, Dante. You were as resentful as Zuko.
He was literally, by the way, he was always in the side isolation booth, and me and May and whoever else was there for the episode, yeah, we were always getting to hang out in the middle, all next to each other, and Dante was stuck in the booth, brooding.
I was in the Fire Nation booth. Yeah. Just go stand over there until we're ready for you.
And the isolation booth is where all the pranks take place, too. Like, when the sound engineers put, like, fake spiders and stuff somewhere in the booths, they're going to put it in the ISO booth, and I'm going to be the one that shrieks and is not Avatar-like at all, and is just like, okay, let's record. I'm feeling tough and cool, and like I can bend elements.
That's, by the way, you did perfect Sokka ADR right there. That's all of my combat sounds.
Oh,
nailed
it. If
that.
You ever need me to step in, I don't know when
yes.
or why or how
let's
that would ever
parts.
Happen. But
it's
I
a big
do...
part of PJ and I's podcast. We do mixed up table reads where we have everybody swap roles. It's fun.
This makes me so.
You guys gotta check
I'm gonna.
It out.
I want to hang up. The podcast.
We're on
I just
want
to hang
premium.
Up like I'm hanging up on the phone. But then there had to be another commercial because all of that just came flooding back in a rush. There had to be another commercial that you did in Massachusetts.
I did a Hood Milk radio commercial. You've also
that can't be a
me.
Real thing.
No,
what's
also
Hood Milk?
I have no idea what that means.
Oh, that's a very East Coast thing, but it's a very popular.
Which hood? Which neighborhood?
The whole East
which
Coast
car hood
is a hood
milk.
of milk. Have you never had a hoodsy?
No, I don't know.
I've never even heard of a hoodsy.
Okay, I'm getting full blank stares here, but everybody at home listening to this podcast is cranking it up going, I love Hootsies. They're like, you know, like little ice cream cups. You know the, what's the, you know the one with like a swirl of chocolate syrup, vanilla ice cream cup?
Like a carnation?
Like a carnation? Like a freezer
aisle. Oh, like you get it
at
the convenience store or whatever.
I agree.
Yeah, I got you.
A Hootsie is one of those little things. And it's half chocolate, half vanilla, and you eat it with the cardboard top, and it's a huge part of childhood. And I
you're the commercial. You're the Hootsie kid.
Yeah. I don't think I was cast. I think I just started emailing people saying, I love Hootsies. Let me talk about it. That was my style back then.
I wrote a commercial for you.
I wrote one where I just talk about Hootsies. So I did those. Yeah, I think that was the bulk of it. Because I wasn't like... I wasn't hard after the acting thing when I was in Massachusetts. And then when I moved to Orange County, it wasn't like, okay, we're in California now. Let's like go for it 110%.
It wasn't that. You didn't move to California because of that. Okay.
No, we moved just for my dad's job and specifically had the conversation like, oh, you can think about that when you're older. You can try it in a little bit if you want. But like, we didn't move there and immediately like start going to LA for auditions. But... my mom saw an open call for All That and knew it was my favorite show and it was my dream. So it was like, try this one. You can go to this open call. So they did, you know, it was like 8 rounds of it was like a big nationwide search. And we did like 8 rounds of auditions and stuff. And
so essentially you booked your first audition in Hollywood.
That's what he's saying.
I think it legitimately was.
But great, Jack. Thank you. Well, great. That's a good message for everybody out there. Just come to LA and just book the first thing you audition for.
But that's a question, you know, I feel like I get asked the question about auditioning for The Legend of Korra with the same kind of question that you could be asked about All That, which is, you know, when you guys auditioned for Avatar, you didn't know what it was going to become. But when I auditioned for Korra, I did know the legacy of this thing that I loved and that people loved. And likewise, Jack, for you to watch a show and then suddenly have it be possible to become a part of that cast, I'm delighted that you got the part, because that does seem like a perfect opportunity to sort of get in your own way, because it would be so scary and intimidating.
Yeah, it was a legitimate dream come true thing where, like, I had been watching the show, the original All That. Opening credits were, like, all the cast, like, jumping on trampolines. And I would, like, watch the show and, like, jump along on my parents' bed. I have, like, very vivid memories of, like, it was, like, straight up, like,
I love
in a way that, like, a child dreams that I have never since dreamed. Of like, I want to be on that. So being able to make that happen was like, yeah, truly straight up dream come true. And then it was really fun. It was like, I did it for 4 years. It was, it was a crash course in professionalism and being on a set and all of that stuff. But it was also like summer job. And it's a big, like, it was a big cast show with, you know, a bunch of peers. It was all, we were all like the same age and making sketch comedy. And it was incredibly fun.
Okay, I'm loving this conversation. Let's pick it back up after a quick break.
The special thing about this show, and I think with Jack and me, when we started this show, this is like before the world changed. You know, this is before digital media happened and social media happened. And we did nearly the complete show before any of us even got Facebook accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
Or let alone Twitter wasn't even invented yet. So we had no clue. You know, now you do a show and you can instantly see the millions of people watching it and the retweets and the conversations going on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, whatever. But back in those days, no clue. Like, we did the show. We were enjoying what we were doing. We would geek out on the storylines. We would come. I remember coming to the booths with, like, did you read, like, me, May, Jack, like, did you read what happened this week? Like, what? Yeah. This is crazy. And we were like, we'd have these conversations amongst ourselves. But zero engagement with anyone outside of the people doing the show about what's happening with the show, let alone when the show came out and how it started turning into this phenomenal hit before social media.
Yeah.
So there was like nobody was telling us how popular the show was.
The first hint for me was like sometime after I think season 2 had already aired. I was at college and someone at a party in college pulled me aside and was like, hey, listen, I know it's a kid show. And whatever, and like, you know, don't tell other people that I watch it, but I think your show is like really, really good. And it, like that thing of like, oh, this is like, gaining popularity and sort of like crossing over, breaking out.
Yeah, transcending kid Nickelodeon watt viewing.
Which, like, it made sense as it was happening. Like Dante was saying, of like reading all these scripts and just becoming a fan of what we were reading. Like, it was an incredibly cool revelation as we started making the show. Like, we made the pilot and it was like, oh, cool, fun pilot. And I didn't get it entirely what this show was. And then we watched the pilot and I was like, oh, this is very, very cool. And then we started seeing the scripts and those first couple, you guys just recapped episode 3. That's like, you know, in episode 3 of a kid show, we've got like heavily serialized stuff where he's learning about a genocide that was committed on his people. And it's like, whoa, this is a show. This is like a really big feeling show, a really narratively ambitious show. And like realizing that as we were getting the scripts and seeing what this piece and what this art was becoming was really exciting and felt like, oh, this is gonna catch on. This is gonna be bigger than what it feels like right now in this small room as we're recording it.
Was there a situation when you were still doing the show in which you walked into a room and a bunch of people freaked out? Or was it like you sort of know because the press is great and people are buzzing about it and you're meeting people like at a party like that here and there? Or did you ever have that wall of fandom that exists now for the show that you experienced firsthand?
I think, Dante, you can help me with memory here. I think the first like Comic-Con big panel that we all went to was while we were still, like, was during the run of the show, right? I think like during season 3, or was it after?
Maybe the end of it.
I think in hype for season 3, there was a big San Diego Comic-Con panel with Mike and Brian and me and Dante and May.
Right.
I think.
And Comic-Con was fairly new. I mean, not new in the world of Comic-Cons, but new in the world of pop culture. But like,
right. How we think of it now. Mostly,
something to do that was, you know, it was still, Comic-Con in those days was like a very particular community, whereas now that community has broadened, obviously, over the last decade or so.
It was small enough that I was able to be, they were like, hey, do you want, we'll get you a room, and like, if you want to like bring a friend or whatever. I was like, cool, can I bring 7 of my friends? And there was like 8 of us, and they all, it was just a bunch of my friends. It was like anyone who I thought like would be genuinely excited to be at a Comic-Con. And they just like piled into my Explorer stayed on the floor of the hotel room that Comic-Con gave me. And then so it was small enough that like they were accommodating 8 of us and had like runners to get me into any like panel I wanted to see, which is like, the level you got to be to have the pull for that now. I don't know if that even exists because it's just so big.
I took the train down to that Comic-Con. I rode my motorcycle to the train station downtown, the Amtrak.
This is how cool he was. This is what I'm saying. What a cool Zuko.
Classic Zuko.
I know. But then I spent the night down there.
Riding his bike to the train.
I came back and my motorcycle got towed. That's what I remember. Oh. I parked the wrong place.
Oh, not cool. Not cool at all, not this cool. story. What a lame guy. His motorcycle gets towed.
I had to take a taxi to a place and get my motorcycle. It wasn't even Ubers back then. I had to find an actual real taxi.
That's rough, buddy. Let's ask some good Sokka questions. And these are Sokka/Jack questions. So you established early on in our conversation that Sokka does love food and has a really hard time getting enough of it.
Never sated, this boy.
That's true of all the characters in on Team Avatar for the most part. There's just never enough to eat, especially when you're a teenage boy. Come on. Of course, you're hungry all the time.
Yes.
So what are some good Jack go-tos that you could just like eat forever and be so happy?
I'm a hippo,
if you don't feel comfortable.
I'd like to answer the rest of this podcast as Ease, the beloved psychic hippo from 2002's The Wild, which you have not seen. I love a burger. I sous vide a lot is my sort of like go-to kitchen. Like I can be kind
That's
of
fancy.
A little fancy, but it's actually easier than any other kind of cooking. So I'm sous-viding some steak, some pork shoulder, some whatever.
Ooh. You gotta teach me. I got a sous vide for Christmas, Jack, and I suck at it. It's never.
Let's go over it.
It's never cooked enough. It's never cooked enough.
You're suing sous vide.
You have a weird idea then about what it's cooked exactly what you set it as. So just you're setting
whatever.
It
it's wrong. The app is wrong.
You might be so accustomed to brutally overcooking your food that getting it actually the right temperature is so unfamiliar. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, this sounds like a real dig, Dante. You going to take that?
It's possible. I need to sear it afterwards. I like the little crispy.
You should.
I like the crisp.
You should. That's part of why I love it is that I can. So I'll sous vide some steak and then I'll, you know, crank a grill or a cast iron whatever on the stovetop, and then I can real hard sear it real fast, get it super super hot and just hard sear it and not overcook the inside because I mean come on,
you're sounding so soccer right now.
I know,
super
it's so
soccer
it's so
right
good.
Now
it's
with
so
the sous vide and like
yeah
soccer
got
with
the whole
sous vide
technique
sure.
of what's going
it
on
it is sort of water bending in a way sous vide sous vide
oh,
is sort
he's
of
trying to be a bender. I'm totally kidding.
You need a machine. That's okay. It's all right. I'm just burning steaks left and right.
And ice cream is my real answer. I'm an ice cream.
I love ice cream. I mean, come on. It's a perfect food.
I make some ice cream sometimes. I love it.
You do?
Yeah.
He's Sokka. He makes his own damn ice cream. Of course he does.
Of course he probably invented ice cream. You invented ice cream, let's face it.
I mean, foreshadowing report, but yeah, Sokka invented submarines on the show and Jack invented ice cream. Foreshadowing report.
Your interaction with fans, do you get a lot of really positive feedback about being a non-bender, about being somebody who is surrounded by these folks who can bend elements and yet you absolutely hold your own as an inventor and as a character? What's that feedback like? What are those interactions like?
It's a thing that I talk to fans about frequently. It's something that a lot of people connect to about the character, and it's one of my favorite aspects of the character is that feeling of like, oh, all of my, you know, I relate it to like when you first go to college, when you step into any sort of new environment and you feel like all these people around me are more special than me in some way, right? They all have, you know, magical bending abilities and I'm just the guy with the boomerang. And to me, like I connect to, and I think a lot of people connect to Sokka's ability to then, you know, find something else in himself. And for Sokka, you know, for Sokka, it's creative thinking and being a problem solver, and also the thing that I love that I think Sokka embodies is being willing to be part of a team with people who you view as more special than you in some way, right? It's like seeking those people out and being part of a team and supporting those people and not feeling
that,
like
you raise each other up.
Yeah, so we can stand on mountains. Let's Josh Groban this thing.
But you're so right. I love that comparison, and I love the specific Sokka element of that, because that is like when you do improv, you always want to be with people you think are more talented because they bring out the best in you and raise and make you get better at what you do. And the same with being on a set, right? Or being with, right? Like, ideally, you're in a supportive enough environment that nobody's trying to smoosh you down because you're less talented or you know less or whatever, but you are always learning and feeling supported. And, you know, in an ideal situation, we would have that Sokka experience where he's not made to feel stupid or bad because he happens to not have this thing that he can't control whether he has or not, and still, you know, absolutely perseveres and is awesome.
His best friends just happen to be superheroes, all of them.
There's an episode, I won't describe what's happening, but where Sokka is having, you know, a lot of self-doubt about, you know, how he belongs in this world of benders and goes off to kind of find a sense of purpose through that. And while he's gone, all these people are talking about, you know, all the things he's contributing and everything they're missing while he's gone. And I think, like, yeah, it's a beautiful thing, this idea that, like, you don't see it in yourself, but other people see what makes you special. And I'm a big believer in, like, seeking out, like, go to the rooms where you're the dumbest person in the room so that you can ask questions and learn stuff from these people, from other people. Right. So I think that's a really cool aspect of Sokka, and I love that it's something that people connect to, and I can talk to fans about it because it was a big driving part of
that
the character for me.
I think so.
I never thought about that before.
Yeah, isn't that great? And he's sort of the perfect character. Oh, you.
Jack, even all the other animals, not just your friends, even the animals, they all can bend, all of them, every single one.
Yeah, dude, I know.
Oh, for crying out loud. You know what? No. we're not going to stand for this. We're not going to stand. In fact, this is an opportunity that you could take or leave. But, you know, we fairly recently recapped episode 2 of the show. And, of course, this is the first moment that Sokka has with Zuko is him smashing his ship into the village where Sokka has been so valiantly trying to teach these children how to be warriors. And here Zuko just blasts through this big old throwaway ship that someone didn't want that he took.
Crash course for these little warrior kids. Let them know this is what it feels like when the battleship comes. Like, how did your great commander teach you? What happens now?
And then I think we can all admit, because this did happen and it is canon, you are soundly beaten and you end up with your head in some snow and your feet where your head should be in the air. This is your opportunity. I mean, here we are.
I probably just made some very dumb action. I probably just went,
This is your opportunity to describe what you wish that you could have done in a fight sequence with Zuko, or you could just dress him down with words in place of what actually happened on the show, which was that he beat you up and you ended up in the snow.
I want to say that was just me suckering him in. That was a long game. Sokka already sensed, oh man, I was just going to get so foreshadowy reporty. Boy, sorry.
You're better at controlling the foreshadow reports than we are. We just, no, we have exposed everything, and you're being the responsible one who's like trying to be mindful of it. So hats off to you, my friend.
My instinct was to just summarize the entirety of the series.
It's not
so. In lieu of that, I'll just say, you know, I Sokka maybe underutilized the boomerang misdirect. You know, I think I would have loved a throw right past him, looping back right towards his face, and then I do like a, oh man, is that something's in the sun's in my eyes? I don't know. And then he has to turn around, boom, right in his face.
You still got him. You got some knocks
in
there.
Yeah, I like that Sokka gets the sun in his eyes, and that prompts Zuko to turn around.
Yeah, and then Zuko has to go, wait, is there such a thing as the sun? Let me check. And then boom, boomerang right in your face. And there was the sun, too, so double bad.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Also, with the character Sokka, there is heavy talk about prejudice. He hates the Fire Nation, like from Jump Street, and rightfully so. Not for wrong things, but be able to judge, I mean, foreshadow report, how we see, you know, how he comes to terms with a relationship with Zuko and even his relationship with how he thinks about the Fire Nation.
Yes.
You know, those are heavy issues for young viewers and older viewers to watch.
Yeah, the extent to which the show did not shy away from like interesting, dynamic, really deep conversations is, you know, a huge part of why it resonates so much with people, a huge part of my love for it and my, you know, pride of having been a part of the show. It's cool, man. We had and sparked, I think, some very cool conversations for people.
But also, I ate a lot of meat.
But you didn't eat a certain lemur.
No.
Thank goodness. What if that was what if you were like, if I could go back and change anything? Oh, yeah. And you definitely.
If I could go back.
Yeah. If I could go back, I would eat Momo.
If Momo, because we don't find Momo until episode 3. So obviously, if Momo had been there in episode 2, Zuko comes on shore. He's like, I'm ready for battle. I say, as an intimidation technique, well, watch this first. And I bite the head off of Momo. And the blood, like, runs down my face.
Ozzy Osbourne style.
Yeah, and Zuko's just like, no, I can't. And he gets on a ship and he leaves, right? Okay, people would have loved that.
Yeah, he's like, those guys up in the Water Tribe are crazy.
Don't sacrifice Momo for your scare tactics. This
truly
is
love
absurd
Momo.
And offensive.
Oh, who doesn't love Momo?
Foreshadowing report, but Sokka has a really intense reaction when he believes that Appa ate Momo. And we see that, by that point in his journey, he's deeply protective of Momo and does not believe in Momo being eaten at all.
It's just another part of the I thought I felt this way about something.
Gross.
And I don't. And that's something that we've said is a sort of a recurring theme in Sokka's world.
The amount of growth that a character that felt at the beginning like purely a comedic relief type of character, like at the beginning, he's kind of a jerk and he's there and I'm making a lot of jokes. I truly did not expect to have the level of the depth of that journey written for that character. And so to see him grow in so many ways and be challenged on so many of his beliefs and, everything that happens with Yue and everything that happens with Piandao and all of these, like, you know, beautiful growth moments and story arcs, having that come out of, it's just not something I knew I was signing up for at the beginning, and it was such a pleasant surprise to get those scripts and go like, whoa, we're doing some stuff. I feel very lucky that they took the character in such interesting directions. I was a lucky duck.
Lucky turtle duck.
And the lucky turtle duck, you were a very lucky turtle duck. Dante, what would we do without you? Because people were screaming just now, lucky turtle duck, and you exactly intuited that as the psychic
you
hippo
coming.
You wish you were.
You're an improv master, Dante.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not next to you guys.
He does the sneak attack where you and I, Jack, are just yam, 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 and then it's quiet for a second. And then he just leans in and lays on like, lucky turtle duck. And everyone's like, yeah, you're MVP. You're MVP.
There
you go. You filter out everything Janet and Jack say and you get like 2% good, and then Dot is 100% good because he doesn't yammer, right? We could agree about that. I shouldn't throw you under the bus, Jack. That's just
no, no. I'm shooting a high volume on this, and if any of them go in, I'm feeling great.
Okay, I have to ask you because the fans need to know, and I'm sure you have to answer this a lot, but just for this place where we are sort of having Braving the Elements be a good hub for all of these conversations that have happened at various cons and whatnot, do you have a ship when people ask? Is there a ship that you applaud on in either series? Yeah. And it doesn't have to be your ship, too. It could be like, you know, you.
Oh, if I'm allowed to go elsewhere.
You could say Zutara. You know what I mean?
I kind of do feel like Zutara. In a lot of ways, I do support Zutara.
You're just making people mad.
I know.
Now.
I'm sorry about that.
You're making people mad, Jack.
I'm enjoying the growing presence of Zuka shipping.
I've seen the Zuka shipping.
I'm enjoying
also.
That.
Shout out to all the Zuka.
I feel like Sokka's formative relationship.
Zuka's.
I think like the UA relationship is really important, but you don't like ship that, right? Because it's like,
what is that,
you know,
ship? That's
you,
I mean,
you kind of can't, because that means you would be giving up something. Foreshadow report.
Yeah, right.
But it's a good ship. I love that ship. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's the one that got away, literally.
But it's always right there, you know? Wow, foreshadow report.
So it's right there, but you know, something, you know, that's the fish that got away.
Foreshadow report.
That's such a good foreshadow report because it means nothing at all
true,
yet. If you haven't,
so vague.
That's a good vague one because it just could mean anything.
It
and you'll
sounds
have forgotten
like just a regular
by the time
part
you
of
get
that
to
metaphor.
That point in the show. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
And of course, Suki. I need to say Suki and foreshadow report for the next episode. Oh. But it, you know, she changes Sokka in very many important ways, and I love the two of them. And Sword and Fan.
Suki's great. The Kyoshi Wars.
When I see Suki cosplay, I like get down on one knee. I'm so crazy about Suki. I'm so crazy about the cosplay. I love her.
Oh my God. I did a con where like a dozen Kyoshi Warriors walked into the panel.
Yeah.
Like all dressed. It was like
kind of scary.
Amazing. It was kind of scary. I took a picture with them afterwards because it was so good.
It's fierce. I love group cosplay. Okay, let me ask this, Jack.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite hybrid animal that you cannot eat?
Oh, well, the deep struggle of Sokka to not eat Fufu Cuddly Poops, who's a saber-toothed lion cub, that's got to be my
favorite.
That's
an inspired animal right there. That's an inspired. And there are, by the way, some very scary hybrid animals on that show that I think there was something about, there are some ones that even that Mike and Brian are like, I still have nightmares about those. What have we created?
What have we brought into this world?
Why?
I'm going to ask your knowledge on the show, Jack, and I'm going to say you probably don't know this, because I didn't know this, but what hybrid animal is Appa?
He's a combination of a bison and a large sofa. He's a combination of a bison and two other legs of a bison. I don't know. What's the answer?
I'm going to tell you, he is a combination of a bison.
Yeah.
And a manatee.
Oh, that makes sense. Oh, that's beautiful.
know this whole time.
Is that canonical?
Mm-hmm.
What word did you just use?
Canonical, like canon.
Okay, canon. Is that canon? Yes, that's
Sorry,
canon.
Sorry, I was raised so Catholic, so.
No, I appreciate
canonical.
It. Canonical
I didn't
is a
I didn't know
great,
that at all.
Great word.
I know you didn't know that because I didn't know.
Why isn't it in the name? Why isn't he a flying bison tea? That's not great.
Well, that's what's funny about some of the animals is that some just get called the primary thing that they are, and some get called wolf bats or, you know, turtle ducks or whatever. I do kind of want to ask, like, why was there any kind of decision to why certain animals get pegged with the hybrid animal name versus, like, they just are called, like, a flying lemur or whatever?
Mike and Brian have named characters in the show after some of the talent that was involved in the show. Right. Obviously, Mako.
Mako. May.
Named after Mako. I mean, May, I don't know if May's named after
Different
May,
spelling,
but
it's
May, and she's May. And then they're like, were you named after Bosco? Was Bosco the bear named after you? I'm like, I don't know. How did they get cool characters and I'm a bear?
It's a cool bear, though.
All right, this is a little very quick game we call Choose Wisely as a tip of the hat to the third installment of Raiders of the Lost Ark. But anyway, would you rather get sneezed on by Appa or brave the dangerous emotional current of the ice flow rapids? But what would you rather have to go through? The danger
I mean,
or the
beautiful
snot?
Coming of age story if you brave the rapids, right? But I think, like, Jack, as a person, would probably handle that poorly. I think I'd be very scared. So I'll go with sneezed on. I've been slimed before. I was a Nickelodeon kid. I've been slimed, you know? So it's got to be similar.
Oh, my God, you actually got slimed?
Oh, dude, I got slimed.
The real double dare slime on you?
I got slimed so many times. I got dunk tank slimed. I got, like, fully immersed slimed. I've been slimed a bunch. And they have different recipes for different slimes. Oh, that's great.
I was going to ask you, can you eat it? Has it ever gone to you?
Yes. Some of them are, like, explicitly to be eaten. So some of them have, like, there are different recipes that it's like, oh, it's totally cool if you eat this one. It's like, some of them are, I remember there being, like, applesauce one and vanilla puddingy one.
I feel like there's oatmeal. Something had oatmeal when it really had to be, like, that kind of that messy, sloppy paper mache slime.
Yeah. So I'd take being sneezed on. Yeah.
Okay. I feel like that's the right answer for you and for me. I also would probably
for you also.
Well, listen, I would love to brave the rapids, but it's just seems I project too much. It's like you know, Aang saying let go of fear. Now, of course, when they go into the ship, they trigger the booby trap anyway, so he was kind of wrong on that point. But I future surf like, oh, here's all the things that could go wrong with this, with ice flows. Whereas if you're a person who is anxious, you just know you're going to get sneezed on. The chances are it's going to be really gross and messy. But the projection ends there. You don't like think of all the different ways you could die.
You don't want nobody sneezing on you ever in public. People you don't know sneezing on you? No, I'm going to take the rapids.
Well, of course you are, because you're you, and of course you would take the rapids. And you would just like...
I ride motorcycles.
You would totally brave it and be great. Yeah, I'm not surprised, and I also applaud that answer.
But then when those rapids get stolen and you've got to take your taxi back, sorry.
And that's when it's rough, buddy.
That's rough, buddy.
Okay, last couple of quick questions. Is there another role in animation... Something that's long gone or something that has never been made into animation? Anything, any character that you would have loved to voice, even if it wasn't realistic in terms of like, well, I don't sound like a hummingbird, but, it, you know.
So
whatever.
The true not at all in my vocal wheelhouse is Batman. I would have loved to been able to be Batman.
You still got time.
I still got time.
You still
I
got time.
My
young
voice
Jack
needs
DeSena.
To significantly mature.
Well, me and Jack talked about it, and I told you, Varney, I've always wanted to play Robin, and I've auditioned for Robin so many times on camera and on mic.
Yeah.
And guess what? I lost it one time to guess who?
Yeah, boy!
Jack DeSena.
Really?
Dante and I are in a DVD. It's probably not on DVD anymore, but
a Netflix show.
Netflix straight to video type of thing called JLA. It's Justice League Adventures Trapped in Time. It was directed by Giancarlo Volpe. That's how Dante and I
both came
to be
got
in there. And I got to play Robin, and that was like the true dream come true.
Because
like
cool.
once I turned, I don't know, 16, and I was like, I don't think my voice is getting to Batman places, but Robin was possible. So I was Robin, and Dante was Karate Kid.
I was Karate Kid.
Because it's funny because your voices don't sound similar. I wouldn't think that you guys would be up for the same. I mean, it doesn't work that way because they're obviously a lot of the time they just don't know what they want and they, you know, they just sort of know it when they hear it. But it's not a situation. Like there are certain people where I sort of go, like Gray, Delisle and I have similar vocal ranges. So I will never work in voiceover, which is fine because she's a genius and I absolutely love her and I would take a bullet for her.
She's got that part.
But that's, you know what I'm saying? So that you could see like, oh, that's why you would both get called in. But you guys both have such distinct voices that it
we
for a second it like surprised me.
Voices.
We both
Jack because you still play young. You can still play. You still play. Young
I still
voices.
Yeah. Callum on Dragon Prince is 14. Another thing I'm doing right now. I'm like 15, 16. That's still largely what I'm getting cast as.
Are we playing teenagers for the rest of
I
our lives?
I think so. Listen,
that's not the worst thing. That is definitely
we'll just stop
not
working.
The worst thing in the world. Never. No, listen, if you stop working, then you can just sort of shred your voice somehow because you've got nothing to lose, and then you'll get, like, down in the Batman. That's not how Batman sounds.
Just whiskey and cigars every day.
Please, let's never talk about what I thought Batman sounded like.
That was a good Batman. That was straight
Christian
Bale. Oh,
really?
Bale.
This is a good Batman? Hey, I'm Batman.
Yeah.
What's up? I sort of sound like Beetlejuice. We come for your daughter, Chuck.
Like, that's the closest. That's oh, but he played Batman.
He played Batman.
So
he's Batman.
Probably the best
that's exactly
Batman. He's
what
my
Batman,
Batman.
Sounds like.
Michael Keaton is my Batman.
What another revelation. This has been a mind-blowing conversation.
We're learning a lot.
So many things have been uncovered, discovered. We got to ask you what kind of vendor you would be.
I would say, water, largely out of loyalty.
Jack.
But I would go with the flow kind of guy. Is that not true?
Dante feels he knows the true answer.
You're wearing blue. You're wearing blue right now.
I think, real talk, Water Tribe, like maybe Swamp Bender is kind of my vibes. You know?
Kind of like. You'd be a Swamp Bender. That's
just like stepping away from it all type of Water Bender.
Yeah.
And maybe
that.
A healer.
Being...
That'd be lovely. I can heal all these animals I'm joking about harming.
Yeah, you definitely, that's redemption right there. You have redeemed yourself.
I needed to put that out there.
Full circle. Is there anything that you are working on that people should be checking out? Where can people follow you above and beyond anything you want to promote so that they, when you can say something, you will?
Oh, you can follow me on Instagram, and once every 2 or so years, I'll put up, like, a picture of my baby. So check that out. That's just at Jack DeSena.
And that's really one of the newest things you produce is that baby.
That baby we put
production.
That out a year ago.
Congratulations.
And it's still going strong at the box office. Thank you. Thank you very much. Watch The Dragon Prince, which has some other Avatar DNA.
That's great.
So check that out. Check out my buddy Chris and I have a YouTube channel where we make a lot of sketch comedy. Dante's in a couple of those. Michaela Murphy, a.k.a. Jesse Flower, a.k.a. the voice of Toph, pops up in one. So check that out, Chris and Jack, on YouTube for some sketch comedy.
Amazing, amazing sketch channel. Really, really
love
funny
it.
Stuff.
And then last plug, PJ and I have a podcast called...
Oh, no, baby, I'm afraid we're out of time.
Can't say it.
Afraid we are out of time. Did not have a chance to talk about the rival podcast.
Thank you for cutting me off. I didn't have a good name. So thank you for sensing that. I didn't have a good bit
name. That's just teamwork, buddy.
Till the bend, just around the bend was what I was kind of working. Something off bend because you guys, I don't know. I didn't have it. So good work, Jared.
All right, everybody. Thanks for another great episode of Braving the Elements. And next week, we are getting back into The Last Airbender. You know it. You love it. The Warriors of Kyoshi. Joining us will be the leader of the Kyoshi Warriors herself, Jenny Kwan.
I'm so excited.
She's the best. She's the best.
So excited. We'll see everybody next Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.